Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. There is nothing better than resting in the shade of a tree-filled park, but did you know that trees in our cities offer other benefits besides giving us a lovely place to relax? From cleaning the air we breathe to helping reduce the intense heat given off by unshaded pavement, trees are an important part of our human habitat. Today, we'll be talking about the trees that make up New Mexico's urban forest and how they impact our lives. And we want to hear from you. Do you have a favorite tree? What have you planted in your front yard? Were you married beneath a beautiful cottonwood, or were your children fond of climbing a particular juniper? Call us at 277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org. Our first guest today is Professor Katja Crawford, chair of UNM's Department of Landscape Architecture in the School of Architecture and Planning. Good morning, Katja.
Good morning.
Now, the term urban forest refers to trees that exist in a human-created environment like a city or a town. Could you tell me a little bit about the benefits of trees in these areas?
Sure. First of all, I think one of the things that can't really be measured is the aesthetic quality, like giving a sense of place and creating an environment that is much more livable for all our urban inhabitants, including non-human others, which is important. But they reduce stormwater runoff. I think something like 11 million gallons a year is reduced by urban trees.
Is that just literally the trees drinking up that water?
Yes, okay. Holding that water for us and processing it. They clean the air. I think a single tree can reduce a pound of pollution a year from our air. They reduce home energy costs. For example, if you plant a deciduous tree on the south side of your home, it offers shade in the summertime and allows the light to come in the wintertime. And the biggest thing is that it mitigates the heat island effect. And as we continue to build and pave and everything else, the temperatures just rise. Additionally, buildings are pumping heat out into the air. Cars are pumping heat out into the air. And the trees are essentially our superheroes, I think, of our cities. And they are not recognized as such. I mean, we all love them, but we don't understand how hard they work for us.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the heat island effect and kind of what are the negative effects other than just making it hot?
Well, it just completely energy costs are one. The hotter the environment is, the more we have to cool our environments inside to create livable cities. But in that cooling, we are heating the environment outside. The heat island effect also just changes the microclimate of the city, and it can become very uncomfortable to live in. And it's so I think energy and comfort, it also creates a much more difficult environment for plants to survive in these extreme sort of temperatures. So we're creating an extreme.
Now, as a landscape designer, you often include trees in your projects.
Yes.
What sort of challenges do you encounter when you're planning for the life of an organism that can live for decades?
Well, I think we have to think of maintenance, absolutely, of a tree. But I'm not even keen on that word because it implies something that is a bummer, you know? Oh, maintenance. But it's
like
essentially like caring for a family member, right? Like, we value these living things, and we should care for them as such. But I think one of the big things is education, public education on how to care for trees. The average urban tree, I think, has a, and you all can correct me, has a lifespan of about 10 years.
Oh,
and
really?
There's incredible physical and environmental challenges. Wind, compacted soil, not ideal planting conditions, lack of irrigation, physical abuse, you know, people chaining their bikes up to trees, all of these sorts of things, extreme temperatures in the fall. all of that can contribute to the misery of a tree. And so I think the more we are educated about trees and how they are our superheroes, really, we will begin to take care of them better. So those are the things that I consider. You also, I mean, understanding this particular site and what trees will do well where is incredibly important, and trying to do as much as you possibly can to ensure that the environment you're placing that tree in and the caretakers of that tree work together.
Okay. Now, also in the studio today is Shannon Horst, the executive director of Tree New Mexico, a nonprofit devoted to planting and sustaining trees in both urban and natural environments. Hi, Shannon.
Good morning, Ty.
Now, one of the things that your organization does is bring trees to neighborhoods and communities throughout the state. Why do you consider this an important program?
Well, Tree New Mexico was founded many years ago, and it's really our model for working, for getting trees in the ground and loving them, is to get communities, whole communities, excited about that. And so unlike some of our partners that really work with individuals and individual homeowners, we really like to work with communities. And we work with a wide variety of citizens groups. And the idea is to get that group not only educated at a basic level about the trees, but also just really committed to caring for the trees and caring for those trees over a lifetime. So you find that what can happen is, like with a neighborhood association that's planted a bunch of trees, they start helping one another. So maybe one neighbor's going out of town and the other one says, great, I'll water your trees for you, because they planted them together and they care about them together.
So it really impacts human social interactions as well.
Yeah, building communities along with putting trees in the ground.
Okay, we are talking about the urban forest this morning. What questions do you have about trees? Do you have a specific tree that you love or a favorite kind of tree? Give us a call and tell us about it at 277-5866. That is in the 505 area code, or email letstalk@kunm.org. Now, Shannon, which communities have participated in your programs, and how did it work out for them?
Well, we've worked with a lot of communities over the 25-plus years that we've been around. So we've worked in smaller communities, for example, out on the Navajo Nation with chapter houses. We have a large program right now in Albuquerque called ABQ Neighborhoods, and this program really got started, I would say, by Councillor Ike Benton. He's the big champion of trees. And it's a program where neighborhood associations can apply. This spring, we're going to be planting with the West Mesa Neighborhood Association. We just finished a planting with Downtown Neighborhood Association. We're going to be doing the South San Pedro Neighborhood at the end of the month. We have five counselors right now that are participating in this program, and they mobilize the funds, and we mobilize the community to get about 100 trees in a ground on one day.
So can you tell me a little bit more about the positive impacts these trees can have on a community, especially one that maybe has suffered from poverty in the past and that sort of thing?
Well, there's some good research playing also on what Katya has already shared with us, that trees do a lot of things that people don't realize. They tend to slow down traffic. If you have a neighborhood where people tend to walk, and many of our communities that are more impoverished would be communities where people walk more, so they'd slow down traffic. They increase property values. There is some research that shows that when a neighborhood looks cared for and when you have that neighborhood feel going on, crime goes down. So trees can do a lot of things that people just don't realize.
So you're literally out there planting trees sometimes. Do you find that there are challenges to planting trees in smaller communities in New Mexico versus larger ones?
Actually, I would say sometimes smaller communities are easier because they tend to know one another more, and you're not trying to mobilize as many people. I don't know that there are challenges. The smaller communities tend to have more areas where you can plant trees because they haven't paved over everything yet.
Gotcha.
So, it's just a balance of finding spaces for the trees and people that will get them in the ground and care for them over the long term.
Now, we have an email from Patricia Bean of Albuquerque. She says the drought in New Mexico and the urban response to this drought has led to disastrous silviculture practices. The city of Albuquerque has pursued a contradictory message of xeriscaping and rebating homeowners for planting new trees. Unfortunately, most homeowners have not actually replaced their former landscapes with xeriscape, but rather yards of rock with little or no water for existing trees. In fact, the rocks are stressing the tree water system. Katja, could you talk a little bit about the difference between xeriscaping versus just putting rocks in your yard and how one might be better for trees than others?
Yeah. I think xeriscaping is essentially understanding using native plants and plants that are adapted to this environment that require less water, and they too contribute to urban ecology, essentially. When you just put down rock or gravel, it contributes to the heat island effect, and trees can suffer from that. They're not getting the irrigation. The soil isn't building the way that it is. It heats up during the day and releases heat at night, and all of that can be very stressful for a tree.
Okay. So how can people be attentive to the environmental needs of a drought-stricken city like Albuquerque while still making sure that their yard is suitable for a tree?
Again, I think part of it is through an education, and we need to be better about talking about which plants are suitable. And the city actually does a really good job of providing plant materials and plant communities that work well together. Drip irrigation as opposed to sprinklers. But having, I think, a consultant, a landscape architect actually consult with you and design your yard would be really helpful. And of course, sometimes that's cost prohibitive. But it's, I think, just laying down gravel definitely has its cost. And I would say an emotional cost as well.
An emotional cost.
As an environmental cost, yeah.
Okay. Well, going back to you, Shannon, most of your trees are planted in front of people's homes. Is that correct?
In the program here in Albuquerque, yes. We're looking for that cityscape space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's technically public space, but it's sitting right in front of a home or a locally owned business.
And do you have like an education component where you instruct people on how to take care of those trees in the future?
Oh, yeah. So we have a sort of tiered structure of volunteers and leader volunteers. And so the education, the leaders that are going to lead the people planting have more education about planting and getting. But we train the whole community association that's planting, and the leaders of that neighborhood association get trained in tree planting and tree care. And we periodically each year do pruning classes so that, and we'll put the pruning class in a place where a couple of neighborhood associations can come together. So about a year after the trees get planted, everybody comes together and they get some pruning skills. And so there's a whole educational and monitoring program that goes with the planting.
Okay. So looks like we have a call from Leo in Taos. Hi, Leo. What's your comment today?
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. What's your question?
Okay. I have two apricot trees. One I pruned 2 years ago and it yielded fruit. The other one I haven't pruned in 2 years, but is it too late right now in the season for me to prune that one tree?
Well, let's see. I think we might need to go to Luce for this question. Do you have any? Luce is an arborist and a tree climber. He knows a lot about taking care of trees. We're going to be talking to him later, but this seems like a question suited to you, Luce.
Well, I think one thing we have to think about is what we're going after on the tree. And a lot of times an on-site evaluation can kind of lead us to a better conclusion on whether or not this is a good time of year to prune. But typically we do prune when trees are dormant during the winter on fruit trees. So, you know, if you get someone out there to check it out, I think that that would be a better place to start, because sometimes we do prunings for fruit trees in different times of year.
Okay, this is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman. We want to hear from you. Do you remember a tree from your childhood that was important to you? Do you have a special place in the urban forest that you think is particularly beautiful or calming? Our number is 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. We are also live tweeting this show, so send us your comments using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We're going to take a quick break.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at RothsteinLaw.com.
KUNM thanks Independent Vehicle Service for its support, just because it's good to have an independent dealership alternative. On the web at IVSABQ.com.
I'm Stephen Spitz, the host of New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. This Friday morning at 8, we sit down with environmental activist Mariel Nanasi to talk about the just-passed Energy Transition Act. The increased renewable energy standards are great. Well, what about all the money PNM will receive for closing its coal-fired power plants, which Nanasi calls a billion-dollar bailout? Friday morning at 8, right here at KUNM.
Next time you lace up your running shoes, don't forget to take KUNM with you. Our new mobile app has live streaming, our two-week archive, podcasts, and much more to keep you company on your run. Search KUNM in the Apple App Store or Google Play and download today.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. We are talking about the urban forest, and we are taking your calls, 277-5866, or email letstalk@kunm.org. I'd like to go to Ellen in Albuquerque. She has a question for us as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. What is your question today, Ellen?
I'm just curious. What makes some trees freeze in the winter and not recover? We had a situation. My mom was living in Alamogordo, and I had gone for Christmas, and we had some trees in her yard that froze, and we didn't know if they were going to survive. And the next year, it just seems so sad because they had not recovered. So I don't know what some trees, why some trees actually recover and some don't.
Oh, Ellen, what kind of trees were those? Okay, well, Shannon, I mean,
That's beyond my technical.
Okay, great.
You're going to have to go to one of your other.
All right, well, let's go back to Luce. What's going on with these freezing trees? Are there trees that are more prone to freezing in New Mexico that are commonly planted here?
That's not an issue that I have dealt with a whole lot. Ice storms, which are big on the East Coast, can cause a lot of damage to trees. We don't typically see those a lot in New Mexico. But, you know, I know that some trees are, you know, are more cold hardy than others.
Okay. So it really just comes down to the species. And all right. So I also have Jennifer Dan joining us today. And she is the program director for the State Community and Urban Forestry Program. And do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just wanted to say it was a really great question that she had. And I think it's important to remember that New Mexico is a huge state, and we have so many different climates and climate zones. And what a tree that will work well in Alamogordo will not do well in Albuquerque necessarily, because we have such elevation changes and climate, wind, and cold. So it's really important while you're thinking about what kind of tree to plant is really do your research ahead of time and figure out what your local environment and microclimate is in your yard. Because unfortunately, not all trees work everywhere in New Mexico.
Now, going back to pruning fruit trees. Do you have any thoughts as to whether or not it's too late to actually do that?
I'm not an expert on that, but what I did want to tell Leo is that Taos has an outstanding tree volunteer organization, the Taos Tree Board, that you could get in touch with through the Town of Taos office. And also to rely on your county extension from New Mexico State University. They have fantastic field agents in all of the counties that can really provide you advice that's timely to what's going on.
Okay, and I assume that those are both easily accessible through the internet?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Now I'd like to go to Cliff in Santa Fe, who is the director of Celebrate Planet Earth. Hi, Cliff.
Hey, howdy, and I'm calling actually from Canyon Road right outside El Zaguan or the Johnson House.
Oh.
Because my favorite tree in all of New Mexico, I think, is this the horse chestnuts that were planted, 160 years ago, in which there used to be two that would put off, what they put off are these beautiful things called conkers or buckeyes that have inside of them a tiny little embryonic tree. And so this one, still after it lost its partner, there was a period where there were no buckeyes, but in the last 3 or 4 years, I guess there's some pity pollination taking place, and the bees from other areas are coming over and helping pollinate it. And it's putting off a couple thousand, 2,000 or 3,000 of these buckeyes. And so one of the things that I have, like, favorite thing to do is to harvest the buckeyes.
Oh.
And I am up to my eyeballs in buckeyes that we then distribute to kids as part of celebrating planet Earth. And the idea there, I think, is if you have a tree seed, if anybody has a to have a buckeye in your pocket, whenever you put your thumb on it, you can actually feel that it's alive and that you're not alone. There's this little electromagnetic vibration coming off of it. So it's one way to keep connected and remember that we're all just a part of a we here.
That's wonderful.
I don't know if the folks there, if they're, what the situation of the horse chestnuts or buckeyes are in Albuquerque, but it would love to find if there are buckeyes in Albuquerque that are putting off their conkers.
Okay, and now you also work on distributing trees that specifically help the bee population. Is that right?
What we do is we distribute throughout the state. We've been working with the state. We send out about thousands and thousands of packets of giant sunflowers and have a competition where kids, anybody who grows the giant sunflowers and sends us a picture of it, becomes one of our sunflower all-stars, and we honor them at our site, at our website. But it's for kids, the idea if you can grow a giant sunflower, which are also bee pollinated, you're taking care of the bees and the butterflies and doing good things for all of us.
Okay, well, thank you. And I'd actually like to ask Katja about the relationship between the urban forest and beneficial insects like bees. Is that something that you consider when you're working on your projects?
For the urban forest?
Mm-hmm.
Well, plants, they like to live in communities too. And I think the more that we know about what lives in Albuquerque in terms of our plant communities and how it can really increase, help provide a support system for our pollinators would be absolutely beneficial, because our pollinators are threatened. And I want to just mention Judith Phillips, who also teaches at the UNM School of Architecture and Planning in our department, and she's extraordinary and kind of a specialist when it comes to native plants. And she's been working with Sevieta on understanding, creating like a, having Albuquerque be a patch city for pollinators. I think that's the term that she used.
What does that mean exactly?
Meaning that we are looking at open space, gardens, spaces that haven't been paved over to become pollinator gardens, essentially. And UNM campus is working on this as well, and Lobo Gardens, creating pollinator gardens. And so I think when we isolate we isolate plants from one another. That's, again, a kind of a monoculture, and they do live in community. So understanding the way that the whole system works. I also wanted to mention that Judith Phillips and Baker Morrow as well, landscape architect who teaches at our school and really was the first sort of founder of our department, and started the firm MRWM here in Albuquerque. Both of them have published books on appropriate plants for Albuquerque that are fantastic. So that's Baker Morrow and Judith Phillips, and very accessible, not just for academics, but for anyone in Albuquerque that wants to learn more about these issues, the urban forest and pollinator gardens.
And am I correct that you can see some of Baker Moore's work with the urban forest right on the Big Eye?
Yes, and actually all over the city. That firm has been really prolific and important in defining our public landscapes here in Albuquerque. And one of the most recent projects is Smith Plaza on UNM campus.
Great. Well, I'd like to go ahead and formally bring in Stephen Luce Allison. We've already talked to you a little bit, of course, but you are a professional tree climber and a specialist, a tree specialist with Allison Arbor, which is a private tree pruning and surgeon service in Albuquerque. And Luce, I wanted to just kind of talk to you about your job, which is literally to climb and take care of trees in Albuquerque. How did you get drawn into this profession?
Well, when I was about 18, I saw a tree crew working, and I saw the climber way up in the top of this huge ponderosa tree, and I thought, well, that looks pretty interesting. And just graduating high school, I was going to school here at CNM for a short while, but I wasn't finding my path very well there. So I really I moved to Denver, and I got involved in a tree business there, where I kind of learned the fundamentals of residential tree work, and really just found a passion for it. And you know, now 8 years later today, trees are pretty much my daily life. You know, it's more than just a job to me; it's really a passion.
So what are some things that people maybe don't realize when they buy a house with an older tree on their property?
I think oftentimes people don't, you know, they overlook the large tree in their backyard. They're just kind of focusing on the house a lot of the time, you know. And I think that a lot of people really value a large tree. You know, they notice it right away. It's going to be holding property value a lot better than just a landscape. You know, a mature tree can really totally change a space.
Okay. Now, I want to go to Gwen Kernel on the phone, who is the co-chair of Albuquerque's South Broadway Neighborhood Association, which is in one of Albuquerque's pocket of poverty areas. Now, a year and a half ago, her neighborhood participated in one of Tree New Mexico's planting events organized by Shannon Horst. Hi, Gwen. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing great. So why did your neighborhood decide that planting trees was an important part of revitalizing the area?
Well, we hoped to make it more walkable, and there were no trees on the sidewalks. It was so hot to walk. So we're hoping eventually that these trees will grow and shade the sidewalks and make our neighborhood more walkable, more friendly, more community friendly, less crime, hopefully. And just I think it is a community building project.
Okay, so can you tell me about the process of getting neighborhood support for these trees coming in?
Well, we had a committee that went around and talked to every neighbor on certain streets we had picked and signed agreements that they would have them within 20 feet of the street and they'd take care of them. So we canvassed the area several times, I think, just trying to get people to sign on board. And honestly, once they signed on board, then everybody, all the neighbors wanted on board.
So it was not a particularly controversial move?
Not at all. I mean, we were so appreciative to get trees. We could use 100 more at least.
So when it came time to actually plant them, can you tell me about that?
Well, we, Tree New Mexico, organized getting the holes dug and having the trees there, and we had volunteers to come help deliver, and then we had people plant, and people in the neighborhood, all volunteers, everybody came out to help plant 100 big trees, and, you know, it was a lot of work, so, but it was good work.
Okay, and kind of what changes did you notice in the neighborhood when you, after you planted those trees?
Well, we, you know, we have a tree buddy system with our project, so that we were hoping that, that neighbors would meet neighbors and help each other take care of trees. And I think that works. And, you know, and I met so many nice people. I mean, people would give me fruit, you know, and it was very nice.
Okay, now I'd like to go to a call from Shannon in Albuquerque. Hi, Shannon. What's your comment today? I'm sorry, Sharon in Albuquerque.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am. I called you Shannon, but I understand your name is Sharon.
And my comment is I live in a historic neighborhood that is just west of the University of New Mexico called Spruce Park. And one of the characteristics of our neighborhood is are the street trees, the elm trees, that were planted at the time of the Depression as a part of a sort of a city CCC program when they planted thousands of elm trees. And they make this wonderful shaded walkway through our neighborhood. We're basically from more or less Lomas University to Martin Luther King, and there are other neighborhoods like this. And I wanted to speak, these trees now are 90 years old, and they're no longer, they're not a good kind of tree to have, but we have replaced, me and some of my neighbors have replaced our trees with lacebark elms, which are approved by the city, and so we are trying to keep our character going, because when you look at our street, there's a unifying feel from these arching trees over the street. And I want to say that this is part of the neighborhood character. Like, the Historic Preservation Committee recognizes that the street trees are part of the whole neighborhood feel and the history. And we are able to keep our trees going with drip irrigation and xeriscaping, not with rocks per se, but using the drip with little plants in the area. So we are water conservational. And the benefits that were described earlier in terms of cooling and shade are really great. So I really wanted to speak to the way that a neighborhood working together with street trees and having a unifying theme to the street trees can really create neighborhood character and give really something special to the neighborhood.
Okay, and I also have a call from Ruth in Santa Fe, who has a question about the Siberian elms.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I like cottonwoods, and I think they're beautiful. But last year, especially in the summer, because of the drought, there was a huge die-off of cottonwoods, and many people, both private and the city, had to cut them down. Whereas the Siberian elm doesn't die. It's, you know, it's very, very tough. It grows all over the place. It proliferates. It's ubiquitous, really. And many people call it a weed. And don't like it, and people advise cutting them down and so on. And I would like one of your panelists to address that. Is the Siberian elm detrimental to the community, to the environment, to other trees? Why do we hate them?
Okay, if we have a hot-button topic for today, it's going to be the highly controversial Siberian elm. And I think I'd like to start with Jennifer from the Urban Community, Urban Forestry and Community Program.
Yes.
So tell me about the Siberian elm.
Yeah, that really is the hot button issue of urban forestry, and it ties back into the comment from the last caller. Siberian elms were brought in after the Great Depression as part of the New Deal, and they were distributed by hundreds of thousands all over the state. And they're getting to the end of their natural lives now. And so most of our New Mexico communities are have Siberian elms top on their mind. They were planted so prolifically because they do great. They are arid adapted plants. They don't need a lot of water. They grow fast. They are great big shade trees. And they have certainly provided a huge number of benefits to our communities that Katya and Shannon were talking about earlier. But they are problematic because they are invasive. They are now categorized as a noxious weed in the state of New Mexico, along with the tree of heaven as the other tree species, a big shade tree species that's a noxious weed. So we're not encouraging their planting anymore. We are looking for good replacements. But the other lesson we need to learn from our Siberian elm process is that one species is not the answer. It creates a monoculture that is not healthy for us. So we need to be looking at those other good species and replacement planting for those Siberian elms.
Thank you for joining us today for Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We are talking about urban trees in New Mexico and their many benefits and challenges. We will be back in a minute.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, the story of untreated severe mental illness and Edward Cordero, the young man who pushed another man to his death off a New York City subway. That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Skip the hassle of finding a buyer for that unwanted car. Donate it to KUNM and turn it into great radio. Or maybe you've got a truck, boat, or an RV you don't want anymore. Donate it to KUNM. It's very easy. It qualifies you for KUNM membership, and it helps KUNM a lot. Call today, 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are talking about urban trees, and we want to hear from you. Do you have any great tips for tree planting or maintenance? Give us a call at 277-5866 or tweet using the hashtag Let's Talk New Mexico. We have an email comment from Kathy, who also wants to know a little bit more about the Siberian elm trees, especially in Albuquerque, as well as trees of heaven and tamarisks that are considered invasive and cause a lot of problems. I wonder if I could put the question to the panel. What do you guys think about these trees? What should the city do about say, let's start with the Siberian elm. I feel like this is the one that's ubiquitous. We see it everywhere. Is it a noxious weed? Katya?
I don't like the term noxious weed. I feel like anything that'll grow here, I sort of have a love for. We love to blame trees and plants and other things for our issues. But, you know, we are just as much noxious weeds, if not more, people, right? We are causing the issues in our cities that have to do with environmental degradation, with crime, with all of these sorts of things. And so I'm not keen on that particular term. I have a great love for the Siberian elm. I don't recommend planting it, again, for obvious reasons that Jennifer mentioned. But, I took my mother to this park the other day, to Hyder Park. She has Alzheimer's, and nothing makes her happier than to see the, as she says, the beautiful bare bodies of the Siberian elms. And there was a nuthatch that was running up and down the trunk of the tree. I think they're so exquisite. And if we tried to imagine Albuquerque without the Siberian elm, it would be an incredibly bleak place. That being said, there are trees that are more suitable, and we do have to diversify our urban forest canopy and seek those larger trees. So, honey locust, black locust, Chinese pistache. There are lots of other trees to contribute, larger and smaller. But anytime you, and the city has gone through phases of having kind of rock star trees, but if one of them gets hit by some sort of disease or parasite, it can wipe out a whole population of trees. And so having a diverse urban forest is the key. And those trees are at the end of their lives. And there are a couple that I can see from out my window that when they are gone, I will mourn.
Now, Gwen Kernel of the South Broadway Neighborhood Association, what's going on with the trees in your neighborhood? Have you diversified? What sort of trees are you have you planted?
Well, I think we planted some pears, ash, redbud, catalpa, and desert willows. I think those were the main ones that we planted. And thanks to the grant from the Neighborwoods and Ike Benton for letting us have trees.
And Shannon Horst, is that something that you guys keep in mind when you're planting trees throughout the state of New Mexico, this diversification?
Oh, yeah. We're always working with the partners like Jennifer and her program to understand which trees are being recommended at this time, which ones are adapted, which ones are native, and which ones should we be planting. Yeah, we're always we have good partners that help us make those decisions.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jennifer Dan of the you're the program director for the State Community and Urban Forestry Program, which helps New Mexico communities develop and sustain urban forests. Could you tell me a little bit about the history of New Mexico's urban forests? I mean, we talked about the period of time when the Siberian elm was being planted everywhere. Is that kind of a typical moment, or have there been different phases?
There have been different phases. The Siberian elm is probably the most notable. But, of course, the native people of New Mexico have been using the urban forest for centuries and for food and shelter and fuel. The Spanish colonizers came up and brought fruit trees with them. They were all about the agricultural aspects of trees. But who I consider our first urban forester in the state was Bishop Lamy. He came out in the late 1800s, and he's the first person we've documented to actually import trees just for the purposes of shade and aesthetics. And so he was the one, I think, responsible for the horse chestnuts that an earlier caller mentioned. Our urban forest really expanded with the expansion of the railroad. The railroad allowed tree seedlings to travel all over the state, and they were really probably the biggest influencer of our urban forest. Of course, our infamous Siberian elm came in about 1917 and has sort of been the dominant species because it did get planted during that post-Depression era in such quantities. But we're making such great strides now. There's so many amazing programs throughout the state that are looking at the future of our urban forest and what it means to our communities, what species are good for us, and how to improve that public education.
Okay, and I've got a call from David in Los Lunas. He has a question about diversity in planting. Hi, David.
A lot of my thunder for my question is pretty much gone now, and I was talking about a move, if there's a move towards diversifying trees grown in the city of Albuquerque and in and around it. But now I'd just like to make just a couple of comments, and then I'll just drop off. But I've had very good luck. I have a large oak tree that was planted from a seedling about 10 years ago, and the specifics of it is it was planted on a shady side of the yard and is watered by the gray water from the house. That's something that you might want to mention too, is that gray water is now legal to be used for watering. And that thing has grown in about 10 years to a 30-foot tree from a small sapling with about a 16-inch diameter trunk. And also, there was an earlier comment about buckeyes, and we also have a buckeye tree. And again, the key seemed to be growing it in a shaded area where the roots are shaded.
Well, thank you, George. We are going to – I'm sorry, David. We're going to go ahead and get to another caller, but those were great tips. We're going to George in Albuquerque now. George, what is your comment?
Hi, my name is George Radnovich. I am a landscape architect in private practice here in town. I was also one of the signatories for Tree New Mexico, so thanks for doing the good work, Shannon. And I am president of the Xeriscape Council of New Mexico, and we put on a conference every year. I haven't heard anyone talk about, and hello everyone that I know on the panel. I haven't heard anyone talk about the use of harvested water and water from precipitation and stormwater runoff. And there's a lot of opportunities around town, everything from street gutters to arroyos to even channels that are managed by the city of Albuquerque or the Albuquerque Metropolitan Flood Control Authority. And I'd like to hear from your panelists about that particular topic.
Okay. Does anyone have any quick comments on that?
Yeah.
Jennifer?
Great comment, George. And I'm glad that this topic came up because it's so important as we're talking about the future of our urban forest and what that means in an arid state that's struggling with drought. We really need to be most efficient and fantastic in our use of stormwater. There are some really good efforts going on right now. There's a arid low impact development coalition that has started up here in Albuquerque that's working on fantastic ways to utilize stormwater to not only water trees, but all sorts of other plants and other low impact green infrastructure components that make our city healthy. The Arid Land and Water Summit every year really promotes this and is a good good voice for this topic. And it's something that every single one of us, every single person who plants a tree needs to be thinking more about.
Okay. Well, speaking of planting trees, we have Rita in Albuquerque who has a question for us. Hi, Rita.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What is your question for us today?
Well, I've had some questions answered also, okay. But I had a beautiful crab apple in the front yard that died, so I've taken that out. And I'm thinking about trying to figure out what to replace it with. And some people have suggested the Chinese pistache. My neighbor has a couple, and so other people have said, no, you shouldn't do that. I guess for the diversification reason. And so I'm wondering, I have a pretty small front yard, west facing, so it really gets a lot of sun. And just kind of wondering about
Luce,
ideas.
Do you have any thoughts as to what might be a good tree to get planted in this front yard?
Well, looking at a smaller tree, which generally I think is kind of what we need to be planting for the future and kind of selectively putting our big shade trees in other places. But the redbud, which there's plenty of different varieties, is a great drought-tolerant, small, beautiful tree. We've also got the hawthorn, which I really like. Junipers, of course, are always going to be great. And fruit trees, you know, an edible landscape is always a wonderful choice.
Okay, and Dan in Albuquerque has a comment as well. Hi, Dan. Dan, are you there?
Stan, S-T-A-N.
Stan, okay. Hi, Stan. What is your comment today?
Just wanted to point out, I think 2 or 3 years ago, New Mexico State was awarded a patent on the Mesa Glow Maple. I got my first two last year from Osuna Nursery. They are doing very well. They are a alkaline-tolerant, drought-tolerant moderate-sized maple that is scarlet in the fall, and it's a hardwood. I live two blocks north of Old Town. I also have an Arizona walnut that is 12 years old and about 25 feet tall. I've got two other maples that are regular scarlet maples and honey locusts. So I try to plant hardwoods, and because I'm in the valley in Old Town, I think I'm in a pretty good area to be able to get away with it. But
well, thank you, Stan. So hardwoods in the North Valley. What do you think, Jennifer, Dan?
I just wanted, those are some fantastic trees that you listed, but I just wanted to point out to all the listeners that no matter where you live in the state, there are good resources for you, and there are hundreds of good tree species and shrubs, but they're really dependent on your microclimate and where you are and what you need that tree to do for you and your family. So I encourage you, wherever you live, to reach out to your local resources. And a good place to start if you don't know good tree resources is, again, your NMSU County Extension Office that can point you in the right direction.
Okay. And now Christine in Albuquerque also has a question for us. Hi, Christine. Christine, are you there? Okay, I think we lost Christine, but I wanted to go back to you, Jennifer Dan, and ask, as the director for the State Community and Urban Forestry Program, I wonder if you could tell us about some exciting projects that are going on in communities other than kind of the big ones like Albuquerque and Santa Fe, but other areas in the state.
Yeah, it's a great question. We have some really dedicated and devoted groups of people all over the state that are working to improve their urban forests. A recent project that we've been involved in is actually getting a handle on what our urban forest actually is. So we've done a statewide tree inventory in our 33 county seats just to get a good idea of what species we actually do have, how old they are, what condition they're in, if they're facing any health issues. And we're trying to work with communities to sort of deal with the issues that have come out of that inventory. Chief among them is that many of our trees, especially along streets, are aging Siberian elms. And how do we transition those trees out of their natural lives and replace them with the good next generation of the urban forest?
Okay, and now we are going to be running out of time here, so I just want to take a moment to talk to the panelists about things that are going on for them that are exciting. Katja, do you have any kind of exciting projects coming up?
Well, I do. I've been consulting with Sam Sterling Architecture on the Harwood Art Center and Escuela del Sol, and the kind of primary concept behind that design is actually an urban forest, that the school and the art center will sit within this diverse urban forest. But I really, one of the things that excites me so much working in academia is seeing the research that's coming up from my students in their classes. And for example, Tess Hull, who now works at MRWM, a recent graduate, did an incredible thesis on green water infrastructure. And just speaking back to George Radnovich's comment about green water infrastructure. So it's a much larger issue, a system, really, a complex system.
And Shannon Horst, what's going on with you?
I think
we've got to make it real quick,
yeah,
too.
What so. I'm especially excited about is that there are a lot of really great public-private partnerships and citizen groups that are working together. There's a real sense of doing things together and getting out of the competition mode, and also taking models and things that work and sharing them with rural communities and others.
Wonderful. Thank you. That is all the time we have today. So thanks so much to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. Thanks so much to our panelists. The conversation does not have to end here. You can share your thoughts by commenting on KUNM.org or email letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. On the next Let's Talk New Mexico, we'll look into trade schools, apprenticeships, and technical education programs. I am Ty Bannerman. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls, and Celia Rainey live-tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.